Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. The name Susan Bennett may not be familiar, but the voice sure as hell is. Seriously, and that's spelled S-I-R-I-O-U-S-L-Y. Included in her long list of credits is her work as the original voice of Siri on the Apple iPhone. You know, the one giving directions, telling you the weather in Berlin, or the lifespan of a Labrador Retriever.
Tell me a joke.
Two iPhones walk into a bar. I forget the rest.
It's also Susan you've heard on McDonald's, Macy's, Coca-Cola, Goodyear, Papa John, Fisher Price, Blue Cross Blue Shield ads, to name just a few. She's also the voice of Delta Airlines, as well as hundreds of GPS systems on hold and in-store messaging. She's appeared on The Queen Latifah Show, CNN, Showbiz Tonight, and read the top 10 list on David Letterman after revealing herself as Siri back in October of 2013. Even though she's been a voiceover artist for many years, Susan is also a singer. She performed in theater productions and in the jazz band Conglomerate during her 4 years at Brown University. She toured with Burt Bacharach and later Roy Orbison, singing backup vocals. She's sung jingles for Coca-Cola, Georgia Power, Orkin, Kroger, and Crystal Restaurants. Susan and her husband, guitarist and audio engineer Rick Hingle, live in Atlanta and work together in their 60s and 70s rock soul band Boomers Gone Wild, along with a newly formed Siri Sings band. Susan, welcome, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here, Sandy. Sorry, that was Siri. Sorry, you said hello, Susan. Hi.
So I'm not going to go for the obvious right off the bat. You pursue music and acting in college. Were you hoping to make it to Broadway?
You know, I never really had aspirations for Broadway. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I knew that music was really the touchstone of my life. I'd been playing the piano since I was four. I play by ear. And I had studied piano for years, and I did musical theater in high school and college. But there was a part of me that didn't really think I could make a living at it. So I didn't really, you know, I thought of it more as an avocation rather than, you know, a career. So no, I didn't really have that aspiration. I kind of, as with many things in my life, I sort of fell into it, pursuing other things. So, you know, I highly recommend that.
But you went to an Ivy League college, Brown University. What did you think you were going to do when you graduated?
I had absolutely no idea.
Like most of us.
When I graduated, I did not have an idea. Back in the day, that was when we all did literature degrees and things like that.
You get a liberal arts degree.
Liberal arts degree. And I really did not have an idea of what I wanted to do. I really didn't. I got married not long after graduation. And my husband, my first husband, was a hockey player, an NHL hockey player, actually, for 12 years. And consequently, because of my life with him and the fact that he actually had a very good, solid job, I was very fortunate, and I'm very grateful to him that I had lots of time to just kind of figure it out. Not a lot of people have that, you know, happen to them. So I was very fortunate in that way.
So where, when, and how did your voice career get off the ground?
Well, I had been singing jingles when I moved to Atlanta. Not long after, I'd say a year or two after graduation, I started performing live in restaurants and clubs and doing that sort of thing. And I also started doing a lot of studio work. And back then, they used to do a lot of jingle singing with groups of 4 to 6 people. Now, the you know, with the technology as it is today, they get 1 or 2 people to overdub. But, you know, in the past, they used to have groups of people. And we used to do a lot of work, I mean, several times a week. And one day I'm in the studio and the voice talent didn't show up to read the copy, the donut of the commercial. And so the studio owner, Pete Caldwell of Doppler Studios at the time, said, "Susan, you don't have an accent. Come over here and read this copy." And I read it and went, "Oh, ding, 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 I can do this." And so after doing that pretty easily, I found a voice coach and then an agent, and I've been doing that work ever since. And that's been many years.
But when you first started singing and doing jingles, was that such an easy gig to get? How did you do that if you didn't have an agent?
Well, you know, things were different then. It was, there weren't so many people at, you know, clamoring to get the same jobs. And I had some pretty good credentials having, you know, sung in a band at Brown and also with a band at Berklee School of Music in Boston. And so I just contacted the studios in my area and said, hey, I'm a singer. I read music and, you know, I have these credentials, and they gave me an opportunity. And one thing, you know, led to another. When you do a good job, then the word gets
around.
Sure,
sure.
So I was fortunate.
Are we talking about the 80s?
No, my dear. We're talking about the 70s.
Okay.
You had to go there, didn't you?
Well, I think we're contemporaries.
It's
so.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's public knowledge. This was in the midst. Actually, it was in the early 70s when I moved to Atlanta and started working, I'd say around maybe 73.
Now, back in that day when you started doing voiceovers, most of that work was given to men, wasn't it?
Yes, and it still is. Although I do see some changes. I mean, we've actually had a woman narrate or read the live performance for the Oscars, and that was a big breakthrough. But, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with our association with the male voice and the female voice. A lot of it has to do with association and how we think of it. The male voice just naturally has more gravitas than a female voice. You know, that's why you've got the guys of F-150 and, you know, In a World, you know, and the female voice is more associated with information, compassion, things that are softer sounding. And so we get to do, you know, healthcare spots and cosmetics and and we get to tell people where to go in a nice way.
In a nice way. But all these years later, it's just so hard to break those barriers.
Well, I think it is. And I don't know that we will ever completely get away from our biologies, you know, and, you know, men and women are different, period, end. And so it's really hard to say. I can't really comment on that. Of course, I would love to see women getting a lot more work, and I would love to see, you know, the not so much prejudice in the sound or the expectations. It is changing. It's pretty slow. But as far as IVR work, the type of stuff that I've done a lot of, you know, telephony, I think that it's natural for people to expect a female voice on the phone, because that's just what, you know, traditionally phone operators were always female.
Right.
It's natural to expect a female, you know, on a phone. So at least that's one place that we've got sewn up.
we own it.
Network.
We own the phone. What was it like when you got your first big national spot? And what was it? Do you remember?
I believe it was, I don't know, it was something weird like Lubriderm or Creamulsion cough syrup. You know, the thing is that I have kind of a strange attitude towards my career. A lot of it, I just really love to work. And so that was why the Siri thing was such a freak thing for me, because I never aspired to fame. I really could have cared less about fame. What I wanted was a lot of work and the respect of my peers. And I believe hopefully I achieved that. So that's why the Siri thing was really, really completely and utterly unexpected and a little weird to deal with.
Was it unnerving?
Yeah, you could say it was unnerving. Yes, because typically with the type of work that I had been doing at this stage of my life, a lot of that work is information giving, you know, so in other words, people call up on the phone or they go someplace and they hear a voice and the voice is giving them some needed information that they're looking for. So consequently, they are not listening to that voice. They don't pay attention to that voice. Consequently, you know, if you're on a million GPS systems, you know, people don't usually pay attention to that, or they're calling to get information on the phone. They don't pay attention to that voice. But when that voice becomes a persona, all of a sudden, this voice is in this little tiny miniaturized phone that you carry with you just about 24/7, and you interact with this persona all the time. You become familiar with that voice. You know that voice. Suddenly, that voice is completely and utterly stereotyped. And so that's why it took me a really long time to decide to reveal myself, because I figured that as much as you would think that being the voice of Syria would give you a ton more voice work, on the other hand, it could very well do the complete opposite. You know, that, oh, well, she's Siri. Well, she does a great Siri voice, but you know, we don't need Siri. And, you know, in our ADD culture, people don't really look into you as much as they used to. They don't take the time to go to the website and see that, oh, she can do some other things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know.
So it's a pigeonholing and it's a stereotyping.
Definitely, definitely mm-hmm. a stereotyping. Absolutely.
Let's talk about Siri. How did that come to be?
I really don't know.
Really?
Yes, I started doing some voicing in 2005 for a company that I still work for. I do a lot of messaging for these people. And they came up with this new process. My understanding, and I've been in touch with a lot of other original series, their understanding as well, was that we were just doing more sort of, quote, phone messaging type of work. Now, granted, it was different because it was text-to-speech work, and we were reading all kinds of phrases and sentences created solely for sound and not content, created to get all of the sound combinations in the language, because afterwards, technicians would go into these recordings, extract sounds, reform them into new phrases and sentences that would end up on our devices. But as you can imagine, 10 years ago, this was the farthest thing from our minds.
Right.
And as freelancers, you know, our job was to get as much work as we could get. So we thought, wow, this is going to be hours and hours of work. This is fabulous. And really, I guess, naively, and not having the type of left brain that the technicians have, you know, we didn't really understand where all of this was going to end up. And so all of us were completely taken by surprise when we were the, you know, Apple original virtual assistants.
Well, what do you mean by all of you?
Well, there are many Siri voices worldwide. The original Siri voices, because I don't speak Japanese, I don't speak Thai.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even though I'm sure the technicians could find the correct sounds to put together to form these languages, of course, it just makes more sense and it's better for the ear and it sounds much more natural to get a native speaker to speak his or her own language. And so there are lots of original series worldwide. There are lots of new series worldwide.
So when you first went in there and you were recording, it's 4:57 in Berlin, the sun will come out tomorrow or...
No. I was recording things like, Militia oi hallucinate, bukra okra ooze. Say the schist fresh issue today. Let's see, cathexis fepatali sexual ease stump. Say the shrouding again, say the shrouding again, say the shrading again, say the... Let me just say my brain has not been the same since.
What the hell is that?
Those were all of the sentences. They were the types of sentences created to get all of the sound combinations in the language.
Wow.
So anything that they could possibly imagine, you know, the Siri or whatever digital voice you listen to, whatever that persona was going to say, had to come from these original sentences, and don't ask me how they created them. I'm sure it involved, you know, audiologists and linguists and, you know, a lot of other people, because I'm sure this was very, very much researched.
I'm completely blown away. If you're just joining us, my guest today is Susan Bennett, a voiceover artist and singer, but someone that you probably know very well as the original female voice of Siri. So you're reading gibberish.
I'd say the first month of recording, there was a lot of gibberish. And then when I did updates in 2011 and 12, a lot of times we read addresses and things like that, which of course went into the GPS part of Siri. But the curious thing, and one of the interesting things that I like to say that we've gone from whatever to it's all good, is that when in the process of doing these recordings, I was working with the director and we were guessing at pronunciations. And for a person like myself, and at my age, we were, you know, we learned to be precise and to do things correctly. And I said, why on earth wouldn't you, why are we doing this? Why don't you have an intern that can look up this information?
Mm-hmm.
And so people, this is why when you go to California and Siri or someone else calls it Rodeo Drive, that's why.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Some voice artist in Pocatello, Idaho, didn't know that it was what
Rodeo. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it's absolutely insane. I don't get it. But anyway, that was the process. And so what we would do as far as guessing addresses say if we had a name that sounded Hispanic or something, we'd say, okay, well, where is it located? Oh, it's in New Mexico. So it's probably pronounced the Spanish way, the correct Spanish. So we'd pronounce it that way. If it were in Massachusetts, we'd say, oh, no, they'd anglicize it. So, you know, it was pretty funny.
How often did you have to record?
The first month of recording, which became the original vocabulary for Siri, happened in July of 2005, and I read for 4 hours a day, 5 days a week.
All that kind of nonsense?
Well, some of the sentences made sense. It was a mixture. But yes, it was very, very tedious work and very hard on the vocal cords because every single sentence or phrase had to be read in exactly the same way. It had to be completely consistent because when they went in to extract these sounds, they didn't want one sound to go up, you know. They're trying to, you know, combine the sounds. So everything had to be on the same level. So it tended to be a bit monotone. Everything had to be said in the same, with the same pace, the same rhythm, the same tone. And so it was very tedious, and it was hard to do much other work when that was going on because it was really hard on the vocal cords. When I did my pickups a few years later, I said, okay, no 4 hours a day. Let's get this down to 2 hours, and let's put a bunch of time between those hours. So
4 hours a day, 5 days a week for a solid month. That's yo-ho, heave-ho, don't you think?
It did turn out to be that. Yeah, and that's why I stopped doing that kind of recording. You know, it unfortunately, it comes down to the fact that everything in our culture is being bottom-lined. And if someone can get you to do something, I mean, I have a friend who reads audiobooks, and he does 6 hours at a time. And it's like, oh, my God, you know, how can that be worth it? Or you must be a lot stronger than I am, so.
No, I understand that. I had an opportunity to do an audiobook, and oh, my gosh. I mean, and I'm not an actress, and it was exhausting. And quite frankly, they didn't call me back, so.
Well, you know, I think in life, and especially culturally, we just seem to be so limited in our view of what our life should be. And we're so involved in comparing ourselves to other people. I've really been thinking a lot about this lately because we're not all going to be Beyonce. We're not all going to be Nobel Prize winners. We're not all going to be, you know, Steve Jobs or Bill Gates, you know, and I think you have to kind of be realistic with yourself and realize that we're all on just an individual life path and figure out what's going to work best for you. Just because you don't have zillions of dollars doesn't mean that you can't have a good life.
Of course.
You know, and so consequently, there are some people that 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, it's not going to bother them. It did bother me. It was just too hard. And I'm a singer too, and I was singing in a band at the time. So I'd have to do all this stuff. And then on the weekends, try to sing with those same vocal cords. So,
wow.
So it was taxing. Yeah.
Now, Apple has changed many of the voices since we first met Siri in 2011. How did you feel being replaced? Did it matter?
Well, I knew it was starting to happen when I was revealing myself. I knew it was in the process of happening. All of us original series believe that it was because we didn't have a non-disclosure agreement with Apple, because we didn't actually work for Apple when we were recording these phrases. We were working for a text-to-speech company. And so Apple came in after the fact. And as other corporations, I think they seem to feel the same way. They want their digital voices to be anonymous. And of course, because all of us original series only got paid for our hours of recording the phrases, we did not get paid for usage.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Because of that, we felt that, well, this is a big deal. Let's promote it. You know, I mean, this is very cool. I mean, our voices were chosen for this, you know, monumental, iconic thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did promote ourselves, and that was not in Apple's plan, apparently. So they changed the voices, and it was starting with the OS 7 system. So the original series were on the iPhone 4S and the 5. So if you have anything newer than a 5, it's no longer my voice.
So when you read the top 10 on David Letterman in 2013, was that basically your last hurrah?
Oh, no, I'm doing a lot of things that are Siri related. I do a lot of speaking engagements, and I still do a lot of Siri-like work. I think the last big one was I was on the Mariah Carey Christmas special.
Let me ask you, switching gears, Is it weird to be in an airport, let's say in the Delta terminal, and hear your voice over the loudspeaker? Or is it kind of ho-hum?
I'm used to hearing my voice, you know, in public places, and I'm used to hearing it on TV and radio. The creepiest thing I've ever heard is my voice coming out of the iPhone.
I would think so.
And people say, you know, oh, well, do you use Siri? And I said, you know, I talk to myself enough as it is.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is voiceover artist and singer Susan Bennett, who was the original female voice of Siri. Switching gears again, what was it like singing back up with the late, great Roy Orbison?
It was absolutely fabulous.
Now, how did you land that gig?
Well, it turns out that some friends of mine who lived in Nashville, I was living in Atlanta, had moved from Atlanta to Nashville. And apparently they fired their soprano that had been working with them. I don't know why, but they'd fired her and they needed to find someone who could do the job and who had a passport. And so my old friend Richard Law remembered me and called me up and said, hey, could you possibly do this job? Our first gig's in Bulgaria.
Oh my God. What year was that?
Oh, 82.
I didn't even know anybody got into Bulgaria.
Oh, it was amazing. And they knew Roy. You know, the thing
wow.
that people don't realize is that the Beatles used to open for Roy Orbison. He was a huge deal in the early 60s. And he gradually became known as a country artist, but he was one of the early rock and rollers.
Oh, sure.
And he's written some really iconic songs. And it was really a wonderful experience. We traveled all over the world. It was incredible. But I'll have to tell you, one of the biggest thrills was singing background for Burt Bacharach.
Oh, I bet.
And I didn't get to do that for too long. It was a fairly short tour, but they started in Atlanta and he brought a couple of singers with him and I think his rhythm section. And the rest of us were hired in Atlanta. He took the Atlanta Symphony with him. And so we were rehearsing. We're in his penthouse in his hotel. He's sitting down at the piano and we're all working out parts and everything. And he turns around and looks at me and says, well, Susan, what do you think about this part? And I kind of looked to my right and my left. And I said,
you talking to me?
I said, yeah. Is he really asking my opinion? I said, what? So he was so wonderful. And to be singing that amazing music surrounded by this huge orchestra, it was so much fun. It was just great. I love singing harmony anyway. It's one of my absolute favorite things to do.
And how long were you working with him as well as with Roy Orbison?
Well, I was only on the one tour for Burt, and that was about, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks, but mm-hmm. I worked for 2 years with Roy.
Wow. Now, you still sing, and you and your husband have formed a band. Talk about that. Do you go on the road?
No, we're both kind of bratty. We don't like to be on the road very much. So we had a private event band for 2 decades, and we just got to a point where we got tired of doing that sort of thing, and the business really changed, and so we decided, well, let's not do that. My husband plays for a lot of different bands, and for a while there, I wasn't really singing very much, and I discovered it was kind of making me sick, because music is just such a big deal to me, and so we said, well, let's do something fun. We were invited to participate in this band called Boomers Gone Wild, which is a band that is just for fun. And we play nothing but 60s and 70s rock and soul music. So it's a lot of fun. It's really fun.
So let's talk about the Siri Sings Band. What's the difference between those two?
The Siri Sings Band, it's just 4 people, my husband and then another married couple. And we do a lot of different things. We do some old standards. We do some, you know, Andrew Sisters and music and a lot of different things thrown in. So
now, is there some form of voice work that you've never done that you would love to do?
Well, I might like to get more into promo work, you know, because I think that might be fun.
What do you mean?
Like radio and TV promos. I've done some of it, but not very much. Mostly I've done a little bit of everything up to this point. The only thing I have not done is audiobooks, as we discussed. Mm-hmm, and I really don't want to do that. I'm at a stage in my life where I really don't want to do anything that long form. The text-to-speech company offered me a job and a 5-year contract. And I just kind of said, well, okay, if you'd like to pay me $1 million. I asked for an exorbitant price because I knew I didn't really want to do it. And of course they said no. So that worked out.
And what's interesting, I'm gathering, is that despite the fact that we get older, it hasn't really impacted your career. How has your career changed voiceover-wise?
Regardless of how good I look for my age or how healthy I am for my age, most of the producers in radio and TV are in their 20s and 30s. And so consequently, we humans are kind of tribal. We really like to kind of hang with people who are sort of in our age group or in our, you know, socioeconomic level or whatever. We're just, you know, we're more comfortable doing that. And so I find that unless you've got some people that are really open-minded, a lot of really young people are going to look at an older person who's been around for a while and just think, well, no, we want, you know, we're looking for really young. But also I think that commercially, everything has been skewed much, much younger than it used to be.
Oh, I agree.
So people with younger, I mean, with, you know, more mature sounding voices or deeper voices are going to get to do, you know, pharmaceutical commercials in the healthcare, that kind of thing.
If I was your fairy godmother and I said, okay, Susan, name it and you've got it, how would you respond?
Wow, that's a very good question. I think I would like to do something where I was interacting with other people more. At this point in time, with, you know, being in my booth and having a particular type of read, most of the stuff that I do isn't involved in dialogue, so I'm not involved with interacting with other actors. I'm mostly doing narrations or messaging or, you know, e-learning type of things that are, you know, solo acts. Mm-hmm. But I really do love the interaction with other people. I wouldn't necessarily want to get into a play or anything like that, because I think my strong suit is much more my voice than my, you know, my full out acting ability. But that was the choice I made after college too. I said, you know, I think I'm a much better musician and singer than I am an actor. So really kind of stuck with the voice end of things.
We're running out of time, but I wanted to ask you before we said goodbye, what have been your most memorable or your most favorite gigs? I mean, clearly Siri has got to be up there. But I mean, you know, McDonald's, Macy's, Delta, I mean, the list goes on and on. Anything that you really feel the most proud of? I know that seems like a silly question.
To tell you the truth, not really. I think more of the people involved. You know, I think of certain things that I had done where I really enjoyed the people that I worked with, you know, and it's not necessarily these, you know, these big, well-known gigs. Mm-hmm. You know, one was I was a spokesperson for a medical products company, and I just loved the people I worked with. It was wonderful, and it was a recurring gig, and it was, you know, it was fun. So that's what I meant before, is that you don't have to be famous to have a great life. I mean, and it's not necessarily the big blingy things that are the most important. But I will give you a sample of something that it was really tough to beat.
Okay,
it was the singing chicken for Zeneca Agricultural Products. Okay. Me, me, me.
Oh,
you know, it's all downhill after that. What can I say?
I mean, and what can we say after that? That's a tough act to follow. Oh, Susan, I really enjoyed getting to know you, and I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your busy day to have a conversation with me.
Well, thank you so much for asking some new questions.
Thanks again, Susan.
Thank you, Sandy.
And as we end our interview, let's ask Siri a really important question. What's the meaning of life?
All evidence to date suggests it's chocolate.
Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And if you have an idea for a guest, contact us at sandyclineshow.com.